I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 506. Gorgeous, gorgeous evening out there. It's time for the Priest and the Rabbi. Monsignor Ted from ICD and Rabbi Shmuel from Aisha Torah. Good to see you guys.
Hi there, Dave.
Hi.
Just introduced them to Trish, and of course, they're best friends already.
Oh, yeah, we're BFFs.
So we're talking
about
fist
bumping.
Fist bumped, okay.
Because he's been to St. Ravens a lot.
That's great. Right.
He knew Mr. Slay.
Tip, don't leave out the Jew.
We had a little chat.
I mean, the Catholics are sitting 8 inches away.
This is not
like,
on purpose.
This is like the black kid in the Peanuts Thanksgiving table.
Yeah, I'm used to this.
We bond.
I got you.
Thank you.
I got you.
Right
I know
before
you're
the microphones
coming.
Came on, we bonded.
That's true.
So you are, is it Maronite or Marianite?
Maronite.
Maronite.
Catholic.
Catholic. Now, talk to me a little bit about that, both of you, just that there's the Roman Catholic Church, and then beneath that are many different iterations.
I'll let the priest take it.
That's great.
You can clean up after him.
Yeah, I'll clean up after
a lot. It's good. I need that. A lot of that, certainly, going back to when our church was founded, to Pentecost Sunday, when the Holy Spirit came down and had 5,000 people join up that day, but they came from all different places. And for a long time, we associated the Latin language with the Roman Catholic Church because it was the common language spoken throughout the Roman Empire. But people naturally, all the earliest Catholics, if you will, actually were born Jews, including Jesus and our first Pope, St. Peter. But as many other people...
God. As many Trish looked at the rabbi and gave him a smile like, see?
As we love you. As the apostles went out and went to other communities, the first people who were Jewish... and became Catholic, they were still praying in Hebrew for a while, but not everybody did. People prayed in their native language.
Yeah.
And so that's basically it's around worship. And to this day, the Maronites use several of the Mideastern languages.
Aramaic, Syriac.
Yes. Yes. And so that's
Arabic.
It basically revolved around worship and the church as it came together. People think of the Roman Catholic Church as this a corporation with all these branch offices, but actually it's more like a group of equals who happen to be in a lot of different places.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think about the Pope as the CEO so much as the first among equals, and people pray in all these different languages, and they're equally respected.
Yeah. So you're Lebanese, both
Correct.
Sides?
No, just one. My dad's parents are from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your name is not pronounced Gazelle.
Well, it was originally G-H-A-Z-A-L, so it had a ch in the beginning part of it, but I think they just made it simple when
Did
they came
you,
over.
Did you grow up in church learning different, you know, languages, like you were talking about?
No. I mean, we always went to church at St. Raymond, so even though I went to Catholic school, I went to St. Margaret Mary Alaco.
She was the spirit princess.
Yeah.
That was Ursuline.
I'm sorry.
Get that out there.
We love Maronites.
So even though I went to a Roman Catholic grade school, we always went to church on Sunday at St. Raymond's.
Yeah.
So, you know, just grew up around the culture and the food. One thing I did learn, Father, recently was that my dad kept talking about how his sister would make him tuna melts on Friday and he loved it. You know, he's just reminiscing. I was like, why every Friday did you have a tuna melt? I didn't know that the don't eat meat on Friday thing used to be all year round and not just during Lent.
Right.
So that's more of a recent thing?
Yes. Well, recent, maybe like 40 years ago. But yes, it was, going back for centuries, it was that way. Catholics did not eat meat. Actually, our calendars generally had a picture of a fish on a Friday, which was reminding
me. Yeah, I just thought that was during Lent. I had no idea. It was all the time.
And Rabbi, you too were spirit princess, I understand.
We have that connection.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
The Catholic
He's
thing.
Like Christians, right?
I've told you before, sometimes it's speaking in tongues for me. I don't know what's going on.
So, similar question within Judaism, because you have reform and liberal and orthodox and ultra-orthodox. Is it as, I'll use the word, friendly as it would be between, the Maronites and another division of the Catholic Church?
It's so diverse. You know, there are people that, let's say, in the Hasidic world that are just very cloistered. And so there's certainly some strong disagreement in principle, you know, in the Jewish world. But you know, when you look at something from the outside, you often look at it as you see it, and it just seems to be, you know, uniform and kind of. But once you get into the Jewish world, I mean, in any particular synagogue, there's tremendous diversity of opinion,
mm-hmm.
whether it be political, whether it be religious. And so, yeah, I mean, there are people that get along fine with everybody and try to keep, like, the peace.
Yeah.
You know, they have that kind of nature. And then there's people that, you know, you can't get along with themselves, and you have all sorts of different people, you know, so.
Let's talk about this, and I mean this in the most complimentary way, and I truly do. Right. No one argues like Jews, like with each other.
Right.
And I love that because, and I want you to talk about that because that's a lot of what ails us in our society today, I think. We've lost the mm-hmm. ability to argue. We've lost the ability to debate.
Right.
It goes straight to nuke. Immediately.
Right.
Like, why is that a tradition and how is that a tradition?
That was always, you know, if you look at the Talmud, it was always, you know, there's a famous piece of Talmud where Rabbi Yochanan, so his study partner died and they brought him a new study partner. And so they said, well, what do you think about your new study partner? And he said, I don't like him. And they said, why? Well, said, because he said the one that died, whenever I would say something, he would tell me 100 reasons why I'm wrong. And the one that you brought me now tells me 100 reasons why I'm right.
Wow.
And so the way that we always refined, and I think you're right, there's a cultural thing, and I think some people have trouble with this, and that's because I think as a people, we tend to be more forthright when we disagree. Because it's part of our culture is that, you know, to disagree and to not be offended by that. And you know, I'll never forget the time that you had on the Jews for Jesus person, and I brought on Rabbi Singer, and they kind of went head to head. But, you know, it is culturally, and so the Talmud is like that, and everything is question and answer. Even, let's say, the Passover Seder is question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. And, you know, what most people do, let's say, at a Passover Seder, if they have their children there, is that if the kid asks a question, not an answer, but he asks a good question on what the words say, you give him a reward. And the person in the yeshiva, the person in the Jewish school, the religious school, who is looked up to, is the person that asks the most difficult questions. Because that's how you get refinement of
that's
thinking.
Great.
It's you know, having people agree with you doesn't teach you anything. And so,
Amen.
You know, I study Talmud every morning with a study partner. And we slam each other, you know. We ask each other questions, and you know, sometimes there's an answer. I'm not saying in a rude way, but I'm saying we're challenging each other.
I mean, it takes me back to law school at WashU, first year especially. The Socratic method is brutal.
Right.
It's absolutely brutal.
Right.
But you come out of it.
Right. That's how you reach refinement. And the way the Talmud was put together was, it was put together where by asking contradictions, then you come to, well, what's the difference? You know, you're always looking for what's the principle. You need the edges, you know. So it often asks almost ridiculous questions because and people say, why do you have to ask ridiculous? Because you're looking for the edge. You want to know is this? And so,
you have to work it out for you, Monsignor. He's starting strong today. if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. DGS, right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back, guys. DGS, Priest and the Rabbi. The gentleman and Trish are available for your questions. 314-436-7900. I hope your parents aren't listening, but Trish is converting to Judaism. Just during that break, she became besties with Rabbi.
We're doing it right afterward.
I'm going to Shul after this.
That's right. There you go.
Ted was making a great point on the break, being funny about it, but it's a great point. We had a great discussion, which we'll have in front of you now, when you said that many of your Polish friends, you're a proud Polish American, would take umbrage at me saying that no one argues like the Jews. Oh. And your and your point was that anytime you're in a tight-knit group,
right,
Jewish people, Polish people, the Gazals or whoever it happens to be, the Glovers, that when you have a safety... You have the safety of arguing.
Right, right. Yeah, people are, I would say, people in our family and in my extended family are known to have opinions and not shy about expressing them. And even in the larger extended, I was pastor at the Polish Catholic Church here in St. Louis for 12 years. And yes, there's it's not like everybody's exactly on the same page, but... They do stick together, and it's true that they might express different opinions one to another, but that undergirding pride in language and culture and heritage and history is a strong binding force.
And I made the point that American used to be enough of a group that we could fight amongst ourselves, Republicans, Democrats, Jews, Christians, atheists, what have you, but Germany or Japan better not mess with us because we're Americans. And I think we've lost that thread. Yeah. We're now literally our own worst enemy.
Yeah.
I think I'm sorry. No, I just want to say, I think that what we have to go back to is, and here's the key to the whole thing, is sticking strictly to principle. I think we've lost the idea of taking all the personal issues out of the whole thing and just sticking 100% to principle, no name calling, you know, and I think that we need to get back to that in this country where we can have political discussion. You're allowed to say whatever you want without facing, critique for having a particular opinion, and just sticking straight to the topic. And I think that's what we've lost, you know, and I'd like to see us be able to get back to that, where you're allowed to say whatever you want to say, and then you're not going to be called a name.
How much of that, Rach and Trish, who are probably more on social media than the rest of us, how much of the argument online does stick to principle as opposed to you're an idiot, go screw yourself?
I think that it's mostly very emotional. I don't see people saying like, I hear you, but have you considered this? you might see differently, Trish, but I think it is mostly emotional, and it's about shifting the conversation to something else. So if I've caught you in something, Dave, you can just ignore me and say, well, what about that time that you hurt my feelings over here?
Yeah,
that's generally how it shakes
out. I completely agree. And no one, if I disagree with you on something, my opinion is immediately out. Like, you can't respect.
Worthless.
Yeah, you can't respect someone else's opinion on something. It's if you don't agree with me, you're a horrible person everything.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is we should be for the truth. In other words, what you should, if you're wrong, you should want to know
happy.
I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And that's what we should all be looking for, not being right and defeating other people in arguments.
Because you just made us dumb.
Right. And what did you gain from that? You know, what are you learning from that? And that's where I think that is really sad to see, that it's very hard nowadays to have like an honest conversation with somebody and just look for what is real.
Hey, John, go right ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just had a question. I'm Catholic, and miracles have always kind of really got my attention, something that kind of helped me to hang on to my Catholic faith. And I was just curious with the rabbi, and then I know, Dave, I listened to you, and, you know, you're always interested in kind of maybe the dark side of life. But even simple ones. I mean, it seems to change your attitude when you look at positive more than negative, because negative is always in your face. And I think of things, simple ones like Our Lady of Guadalupe, and she comes down and, you know, you can go and still see the picture that she created of herself that was made 1,500 years ago that should have dissolved by now. And it's just simple little things like that. And miracles happen every day, but it always seems like if you sort of concentrate more on the positive things and see just what's out there helping you every day, it makes you a little happier person and you spend a lot less time on the internet.
Yeah. Rach just had that conversation with me a couple days ago, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, you know, how many times have you thought that things were going terribly and then your life didn't explode? Like, God's been taking care of you through all of that. Why wouldn't he take care of you through this next thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
One of my favorite philosophers is Mark Twain. Mark Twain says, everybody's about as happy as they decide they want to be. And, you know, happiness is, in some senses, is a choice. People in very dire conditions sometimes end up very happy. On the miracle thing, you know, the image of the Blessed Virgin Mary on in Juan Diego's robe, his robe is called a tilma. And yes, that's the miracle that we talk about. But the real miracle there is what happened in Grace when Mary told, he was an Indian, and he told him that the practice that the Indians had was to sacrifice the young virgins as a sacrifice to the gods to appease them when things are going wrong in the village. And Mary told Juan Diego that that was not the right way to go, that Jesus came to offer himself up for our sins, and they shouldn't be sacrificing. And that's one reason that that the Blessed Virgin Mary became so popular throughout Mexico. In its sense, it was a liberation of these people from the way that they were practicing their sacrificing people to the gods. So that why wouldn't they rejoice over that? It was very human and beautiful and positive thing to do.
Going to do more with the priest and the rabbi on the way back after the break. 436-7900. Welcome back, guys. DGS 537, the priest and the rabbi, and just having fun, having good conversations. 436-7900. Rabbi, I saw I wouldn't call it a Jewish horror movie. I don't know if you have Jewish horror movies, but it was a horror movie based on Judaism.
It's called most of Jewish history, but yeah, go ahead.
Well played, sir. This was called The Vigil, and it was about someone sitting Shiva. And
yes.
I you know me, I find all things Hebrew fascinating.
Right.
And in this movie, the person who passed away didn't have a lot of family. And the rabbi paid this person to sit Shiva, paid him handsomely, like $500 for a night or something.
Mm.
And so I've always known about this practice. I've never understood it. So
right.
Could you sort of walk us through?
Yeah. Yeah. When somebody passes away, so there's a mourning process. You know, one of the things, Judaism has a lot of kind of helpful laws. And so you go through a process. It really lasts, the whole process lasts for a parent a year.
Wow.
For anyone else, a month. And for anyone, say anyone else, I mean any close relative.
Yeah.
I mean anybody else. But so, and then you say every year, you say there's a yahrzeit, it's called. There's the annual, and you go to synagogue and say Kaddish for the person. But for 7 days, you do not go to work. You sit on a low chair, and you talk about the person who's deceased. And those who keep the original traditions, you tear your garment. You're not allowed to overly mourn because it's actually in the Torah itself. And the reason given is because if you were to overly mourn, it would be as if to say, this is final. You're never going to see this person again. They don't have a soul. And so the idea is that I once heard a rabbi put it well to me, when somebody passes away, it's like taking someone to the airport that you're not going to see for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But the process of it helps. For the first 7 days, it's very strict. Like I said, you sit, people come and visit you. The prayer services are in the house of the deceased. You know, and you stay there with family the whole week and just discuss the life of the person who passed away.
And real then goes, question.
Yeah.
What if the person wasn't well-liked? What if they just weren't a very nice person? And there are a lot of people that don't like their mom or dad or their brother.
Right.
Like,
right.
What do you do?
Well, you guys just kind of discussed it a minute ago is you find the good.
Okay.
You know,
sure
sometimes I sometimes do funerals occasionally. I'm not a synagogue rabbi, but there's people that don't belong to a synagogue, whatever it is, and I might. And I've had cases before where there's just really not a lot of good things to say, really. And so, but you search for the good. And the point of it is, we don't bring up the negative, no matter what. The point of it is to learn the positive lessons that we can take from the person's life. Most people in their life.
So remember when he did that bad thing? Here's just, what we can learn from
that. You try not to do that. Or he wasn't, we can learn at least he wasn't always not nice. But the thing is, you know, you try to find positive things in the person's life that you can learn from. I've got to say the majority of the time, what I have found is that actually you wish you knew the guy better. You know, you wish once you learn so much about his life, you only wish that you had known him better. But the idea of it is to slowly separate from the person and to give honor to their life. And so you want to give them honor.
Yeah.
And you also want to slowly separate. I find a lot of people who don't mourn properly, it has a negative consequence.
Yeah.
You need to go through a process of letting go of a close relative.
I mean this. One of the nicest things anyone has ever said to me was that Monsignor said that in spite of not being Catholic and being an agnostic, that he would do my funeral. Meant a lot to me. I would like the two of you to do it if I go before you guys.
Right.
It'd be a great honor. And I'm going to visit a chimpanzee house next week where the feds are going to have the SWAT team come in and serve a warrant. So there's a shot.
So
now, Ted, in all your years, you've probably never done a funeral for someone who died at the foot of a wanted chimp.
No, that's a true statement, Dave. You know what? That's a true statement. Yes, maybe. It is, and we would find plenty of things to say that would be, you are a very memorable person.
Thank you.
So we would... One of our sayings about honoring the dead is that the funeral service itself is actually for the living rather than for the dead. But it's our the service reflects our love relationship with the deceased, regardless of what the person has done. I've actually joked about it from the pulpit before, just in a regular Sunday homily, and said, you know what? At most funerals, what do we say about this person? They would do anything for anybody. I said, frankly, that's not very often true.
Yeah.
But sometimes it is, but I think the funeral itself and our love relationship with the person, just like the rabbi said, one of the things we always think is, wow, I wish I had known them better. But it helps us think about our own lives so that even if the person truly wouldn't do anything for anybody at any time, but it reminds us that that's maybe what we should be doing.
Yeah.
And to look at life that way.
We're going to have to take this into the next segment, but I want to set it up. My understanding, which is minuscule, of Judaism is that your belief in the afterlife, and I know there are lots of different iterations of Judaism, is fuzzier. Than Christianity. Like, we have streets of gold, and there's Jesus, and there's my dad. But for you guys, I thought it was more like there's an afterlife, your soul goes, but it's not like Christianity paints it.
I mean, in Judaism, the afterlife is seemingly spiritual. You know, there's a lot of discussion about the afterlife in the Talmud, and seemingly it's spiritual. So a person, what we're really doing in this world, according to Jewish tradition, is we're making ourselves. We will be what we do in this world. That's what we will be.
That's great.
And what a person is meant to do is to work on themselves in this world. All the challenges that we think are actually negative and that we try to avoid, and we don't look for trouble, but it's really the challenges in life that make us who we are. If you think about it, if everything would go, I always tell people, things would go the way that you always wanted them to. Everything would just go perfectly. Life would become absolutely meaningless to you. It's the struggles that actually make us who we are. And that's where we get to shine in our character traits, is how do we deal with the hard balls that were thrown. And so that's what the afterlife, you're right in that we don't have a picture exactly of what it's like. We're told that our souls reunite and that we reunite with our relatives and that we, like I said, we are what we make ourselves into. If you don't have any kind of spiritual being, there's nothing to connect to there because there's no steaks there, there's no pizza, there's no movies. So if that's all you are in this world, you're not going to have any antenna, so to speak, to connect with what's there. Mm. And so we need to build ourselves. And being spiritual isn't a spooky thing. It means being loving. It means saying, greeting people and smiling. And you know, you talked about being positive. The first thing that you say in the morning in Jewish tradition is, I'm thankful to be alive.
Yeah.
And you go on from there. You know, if you don't start out the day in that way, you're in trouble.
You just lost Trish. There's no pizza in Jew heaven. So
sorry about that.
Way to go, Rabbi. Tell you guys, you're right back to the Catholic Church now. Back, guys, DGS 552. I'm going to sum up what just happened. And we need another hour. But on the break, Trish says, look, to the rabbi, I'm Catholic, but I don't think that we're all right and you are all wrong. Do you agree? And Rabbi goes, no, I disagree. She goes, you think I'm wrong? He goes, yeah. And then she asks Monsignor, like, well, what do you think? And Monsignor said, yeah, I think there's some underlying truth, which is Monsignor's way of saying, like, yeah, I think he's wrong. Because clearly, the elephant in the room, his name is Jesus. And you believe that Jesus was the Mashiach, the Messiah. You believe he was not. That's a big point of disagreement.
But right. My point is, I don't think Catholics got it all right and the Jews aren't going to heaven because they think a different way. What I'm saying is, I think more of, you think the way you think, and you believe in God, and right. We're still going to heaven, and however you right. get there, people take different paths.
Right.
I just don't like the I'm right.
Right. Well Judaism
you're wrong, and so therefore you're not going to
heaven. Right. Well, Judaism doesn't say that other people don't go to heaven. That's not true in Judaism. Judaism says that other people you don't have to be Jewish to go to heaven. And so you can be wrong. Everybody in this world is going to die wrong about some things. Everybody. None of us are going to go and we're right
but
on
the
everything.
Catholics, more so.
So so the thing is like this is it's not that I'm saying what I'm saying is yes, we have disagreements and it's not just that. There are other theological disagreements that exist and I'm not like I said is I if I would say like let's say for an American cult, do we the things that we agree on are way more important. You know, we agree on family. We agree on loving people and being loving and being good to our children and raising a society that's healthy and good. We agree on huge things. But I'm not going to say that I don't have disagreements. That would be disingenuous.
Yeah.
And so I do have disagreements, and that's fine. And we have disagreements. You know, I have disagreements in Shoal. You know. And so what I'd say is that I do obviously have disagreements. I'm not going to say that I don't. But I do agree with you. First of all, it doesn't mean that the other people are bad people or aren't going to heaven.
I got to tell you something. I'm just laughing. As an agnostic, if I die and I wake up somewhere with anyone that they're nice to me, I'm like, fine, fine, fine. I don't care if it's Muslims. I don't care right. if it's, I don't care. Like, my standards are so low for the afterlife.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope it's good.
Me too.
This is a hard world.
It is.
This is a very, very hard world.
Wise words. Because it is. I think especially now, not to discount people who lived 5,000 years ago or 1,000 years ago, but man alive, we have so much stimuli, so many opinions coming at us. We have a gazillion television stations and a million books. It's difficult.
We do have. I actually have a hard time feeling sorry for ourselves. I agree that those things add complexities, but my take is that those are what I call first world problems. I look at I'm a glass half full kind of a person. Start the day with the fact
here we go.
Dave has a hard time with this positive thinking. But the rabbi says, thank God for each day. Thank God he gave us another day. And thank God for the chance to do some good today.
Right.
Yes, I truly don't see our issues as worse than previous ages that had plagues and wars and violence.
All right, let's do this. Dave Klein, break the tie. Who's right, the priest or the rabbi?
That's a tie for first there.
Tie goes to the runner. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. This just gets better and better. Trish was asking how long we've been doing this. I think 19 years with the rabbi.
So long.
I think 10 years with Monsignor. So hopefully for another 20.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.